SBS, a world of difference. You're with NITV Radio, on mobile, online and on radio.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land NITV Radio broadcasts from, the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people of the Kulin Nation and their elders past and present. We also acknowledge all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander tribes and clans we broadcast to. From the mountains to the plains, from the desert to the sea, from fresh water to salt water.
Wadamuli and welcome to NITV Radio. I'm Kerry Lee, your host for this Monday, the 7th day of April 2025. And coming up for you in the program this afternoon, we're going to be yarning about Ngarra Jarra Noon. It's a very special healing community event that's happening this weekend in Naam. So more on that later. You'll be hearing from AFL great Aussie sporting icon. I'm talking about Nicky Winmar. He'll be on your radio a bit later in the program. Also on your radio, Nathan Lovett-Murray, former Essendon football player and also from the Indigenous Sports Network, is here to talk with us about the Ngarra Jarra Noon ceremony, which is on this weekend. Also coming up, we're going to be hearing all about the Imperial Hotel in Erskineville. That's right, it's in the inner city west in Sydney. It's actually been added to the New South Wales Heritage Register. That's right, this place, this iconic pub, has deep cultural and historical significance to the queer community. We'll find out more about that later on in the program. And also coming up very soon for you, in just a moment, all the latest SBS news you need to know for this Monday.
Australia Day 1972 saw the first Aboriginal embassy erected outside Parliament.
The native title legislation must be amended.
And they've walked this land so many times before anybody came.
I am sorry.
In this bulletin, a parliamentary inquiry hears evidence on the Dural caravan fake terrorism plot. Peter Dutton concedes the coalition got it wrong on its work from home policy. And in cycling, Belgian world champion Lotte Kopecky makes history at the Tour of Flanders. New South Wales Deputy Police Commissioner David Hudson says 14 incidents that have targeted the Jewish community in recent months are connected to a common source involving links to organised crime. Mr Hudson has been giving evidence on the first day of public hearings as part of an inquiry into the discovery of an explosives-laden caravan in Sydney's northwest in January. He says it was not until 21st of February, a month after police received the tip-off on January 19, that they were able to confirm that the incident was a fake terrorism plot with ties to organised crime. He says that then allowed them to find links between a series of attacks on cars and property in Sydney's eastern suburbs. A task force set up in December 2024 to track hate crimes has recorded at least 700 incidents targeting both the Jewish and Muslim community. He says the volume of high-profile attacks has decreased since police last month executed raids and made arrests as part of the task force investigation.
Since the 2nd of February, when we started making initial arrests in relation to Pearl, making arrests along that pathway and identifying individuals through Pearl, the links to those jobs became more apparent because of that, because of the cessation of incidents as we were arresting offenders. But certainly since the 10th of March, there hasn't been anything that fitted the criteria of Strike Force Pearl, the terms of reference, to be captured under that investigation since the 2nd of February.
The Coalition says it will scrap its election policy on ending work-from-home arrangements for public servants and change its plan for 41,000 Commonwealth job cuts. Instead of pursuing job cuts through forced redundancies, the Federal Public Service would be downsized through natural attrition. In a statement, opposition spokesperson for finance, Jane Hume, says the party has heard community feedback and changed its mind to now understand that flexible working options options, including working from home, is part of getting the best out of any workplace. Coalition leader Peter Dutton told Channel 9 they got it wrong on the policy, and now it is time to move forward.
We're listening to what people have to say. We've made a mistake in relation to the policy. We apologise for that and we've dealt with it. But we're not going to be framed up by a Prime Minister who's got a real problem with the truth. What we've said is that we've listened to Australians and we've made it very clear that work from home is a reality for many people, for our friends, for people in our workplace, and we're supportive of that. So Labor tried to twist it into something else, and I think we just clarify our position today.
Senior officials in the Trump administration say whether US President Donald Trump is open to negotiations on the new tariffs announced last week on April 2nd is up to him. US officials say more than 50 countries have reached out for talks in a bid for concessions and exemptions. Mr. Trump has insisted his policies will never change. He posted on social media, "We will win, hang tough, it won't be easy." The higher rates are set to be collected beginning Wednesday, April 9th, ushering in a new era of economic uncertainty with no clear end in sight. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent told NBC's Meet the Press any decision on the permanency of the tariffs is one for the president.
He's created maximum leverage for himself, and more than 50 countries have approached the administration about lowering their non-tariff trade barriers, lowering their tariffs, stopping currency manipulation. And Chris, you know, they've been bad actors for a long time. And it's not the kind of thing you can negotiate away in days or weeks.
Many economists have warned that tariffs are passed on to consumers and that they could see price rises in the US. Meantime, the uncertainty over trade and manufacturing has helped fuel a days-long panic in global markets. And Pope Francis has appeared in St. Peter's Square for a special Jubilee Mass for the sick, marking his first public event at the Vatican since being hospitalised with pneumonia. Arriving in a wheelchair, the Pope smiled and waved to the applauding crowd before being brought to the front of the altar, where he greeted those present. The Pontiff then received the Sacrament of Reconciliation inside the Basilica, prayed, and then passed through the Holy Door to greet pilgrims. Among them was Jessica Cadena, from the United States.
It was a beautiful experience. I started crying. I never imagined I would be able to be here, and it was, I don't know how to explain it. It was just a feeling that I have no words for. It was beautiful. It was beautiful.
This month will mark 50 years since the end of the Vietnam War and the extraordinary rescue operation of babies and children from Vietnamese orphanages. Around 3,000 children were airlifted out, 281 of them bound for Australia in what's now known as Operation Babylift. The youngest were placed on board the flight in cardboard boxes. Dr. Indigo Willing was adopted from Vietnam 3 years before Operation Babylift. Her pioneering research has shed light on the complex legacy of post-war inter-country adoption. She says many of the children adopted into families that were predominantly Anglo-Australian faced challenges with racism, identity, and belonging.
Some of the findings, I think, though, from my research that really were quite sad is the isolation and loneliness that a lot of the Vietnamese adoptees felt growing up, not knowing other Vietnamese people, even if it was adoptees. And then this double blow when they did find Vietnamese people that they didn't connect because they didn't know the language and the culture necessarily. So it was like a sort of like a double loneliness.
An American molecular biologist has won the Breakthrough Prize in Life Sciences for developing two gene editing technologies that has already improved the lives of patients with severe genetic disorders and diseases. David Liu will receive $5 million or US $3 million for his work on what's called base editing and prime editing. He says he plans to donate most of it to support his charitable foundation. His lab has made much of its work freely accessible, sharing DNA blueprints through a non-profit library used by tens of thousands of labs worldwide. Dr. Liu says he is proud to receive the prize, but he is very concerned about the future of science research under the Trump administration, which has enacted mass layoffs and defunding of agencies.
it's incredibly real, and it's already having a chilling effect on young scientists and on career scientists at all stages. Grants are being canceled, fellowships are being canceled. Students who were admitted to graduate school so that they can join labs, like the labs being honored today, have had their admissions canceled because of policies that are taking that support away.
And now to sport. In cycling, Lotte Kopecky has become the very first female rider to win the Tour of Flanders three times. The Belgian cyclist launched her sprint with just over 200 metres to go, crossing the finishing line with a time of 4 hours, 24 minutes and 34 seconds. Pauline Ferrand-Prevot and Liane Lepeur rounded out the podium. Defending champion Elisa Longo-Borghini had to abandon the race after a crash. Kobecki says there was a point in the race where she felt confident about winning.
Good. it was a crazy race with a lot of crashes in the beginning. I was pretty nervous and, I didn't have the best legs in the beginning, but, I tried to stay calm and I knew that after a few climbs, my legs felt better and better. And then I know that in the end I have a pretty good shot, so, pretty confident actually.
And in national cricket news today, NITV and Cricket Australia broadcast the National Indigenous Cricket Championships, or the NICC, women's and men's games to be held today on what is a week-long T20 event held in Mackay, Queensland, and broadcast live on NITV. And to watch all the National Indigenous Cricket Championships this week, you can tune into your Channel 34 on your television for NITV's coverage, or check out SBS On Demand. And that's it for SBS News for your Monday. And right here on NITV Radio, let's bring you the weather for this Monday afternoon. Perth today, partly cloudy and 28. Adelaide, partly cloudy, 23. Nam or Melbourne, possible showers and 19. Hobart, much the same, 15 today. Canberra in the nation's capital, sunny 22. Wollongong, possible late showers, 25. Sydney, sunny 25. Newcastle, also sunny, 26. Brisbane up north there, Queensland, sunny 30. Cairns in the far north Queensland, shower or two and 30. And in the top end of Australia, Darwin, showers and 33. They may or may not have been dancing in the studio for that track, that classic, deadly, solid track from Shakaya out of Queensland. The duo that are Shakaya from back in the 90s, that song is Stop Calling Me, is the name of that track. And what a Morley to you. Thanks for your company today on the radio right across Australia and right here on NITV Radio. And coming up for you now, well, Ngarra Jarra Noon. It is a very deadly healing community event. It's actually happening this weekend in Nam or Melbourne. And coming up for you in just a moment, we're going to be yarning with the event ambassador. That's right, AFL great, and can I say all-round Aussie sporting icon, that's right, Nikki Winmar, will be on your NITV radio coming up very shortly. And former St Kilda player, of course, who did in fact, you know what I'm talking about, people. He lifted up his jumper and showed his deadly black skin when he was given lots of taunts and racist, awful comments from spectators in that game back in 1993. He talks with us about that, takes us back to that very moment on the radio very soon. We also hear from Nikki Winmar today on the current state of play for recruitment for AFL players, Indigenous AFL players. That's right, not many have been recruited this year. In fact, Indigenous player numbers are less than previous years. We'll get Nikki's thoughts on that coming up very soon. Also on your radio shortly, former Essendon footy player Nathan Lovett-Murray will be joining me. He's also from the Indigenous Sports Network, which is a mob behind this very deadly healing event coming up for you very shortly. And of course, just to mention this event, Ngarra Jarra Noon. It's happening this weekend, this coming Sunday, the 13th of April, and it's on at Victoria Park, Lulai Street, Collingwood.
NITV Radio, Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 1 p.m. or anytime online.
Yeah, welcome to NITV Radio today, Nikki. Who's your mob and where are you from?
Down south of West Australia, a place called Pinjelly. My mum was born a bit further away towards Kalgoorlie Way, Calabarran, so I was born there. So we're Noongars.
Too deadly. Thank you, my brother. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, you are an AFL legend, if I can say that. Nikki Winmar, thanks for joining us on NITV Radio. You are an ambassador for a very deadly healing event coming up in the Melbourne or NAM community. What's it like to be an ambassador for this event?
Well, it's just important that we sort of, reflect on what happened that day and all that stuff. So it's just a reminder that people know that, we don't tolerate stuff like that anymore, and for the next generation as well. It's very important for the young ones that are coming through that they, they can play AFL to their full potential without being vilified. So
you just mentioned the young ones there coming through and for them to understand. Yeah. Can you take us back to that iconic moment back in 1993? How would you explain that particular day for new generation of blackfellas?
Mm. It's just... it was pretty, horrendous. It was a horrible day, but we basically won the game. And, just let them know that, what I did for my stand for pointing to my skin to say that, I'm black and proud. So that was important to let people know. And now before my two young kids were there at the same time, which we were escorted out to the car park by security guards. It was horrible, but I can't repeat the things they were saying on the radio, but it's still there. It's important that we do go back once a year and remember the things that not only myself but the past Indigenous players did as well. So it's very important, and Nathan's doing a great job, and I'd also like to thank the Collingwood Footy Club for letting us be a part of it again. And so it's just got to just keep doing what we got to do.
And also, my next question to you, Nikki Winmar, how do you feel after going through this healing ceremony with the community and others such as Nathan Lovett Murray, former Essendon player?
Like I said, we just got to keep doing what we got to do. It's not only with ourselves, but it's multicultural. Players are playing these days. You get boys from overseas are playing, and it's doing really well, which is good. And also, it's for something else that we Nathan wants to do with the custodies of Indigenous people that we lost. And I've lost a lot of Indigenous family members in West Australia Dales, and we've got to do what we can do there as well. So it's a part of everything, not just about myself, but just about the ones that we have lost and the families that have gone through it. What happened the other day with young Andrew, it was sad. Just still get a bit emotional about it because he was a great kid, he's a good footy player, and Jimmy's a great, he's a good man, and I like to pay my respects for the Cracker family and to Andrew's wife, Garlitz as well, a part of the family as well. So I want to say sorry about to hear what happened to Andrew, but we'll just keep doing what we got to do, and that's the most important thing. That's what I said. It's just we can't stop. So, there's so much that we can still give. And now, we'd like to see maybe some of the players who are, who played the games, maybe get some jumpers with the names on them, let people see them.
I love that idea, Nikki Winmar. My final question to you today. I have seen some news reports from the last 12 months or so from Australian media, and there are some news reports saying that the Indigenous players' recruitment is actually falling and we're down in numbers compared to previous years.
I've heard of it, but like I said, but it's just too scared to be a part of the great game that we've all grew up and learned to watch, Weren't so many Indigenous players playing back then in the 70s and 80s. And then, so it's just got to keep fighting the fight.
Thank you so much for your time today on NITV Radio, AFL legend and icon, Nikki Winmar.
Thank you.
Your community, your conversation. NITV Radio.
My name's Nathan Lovett Murray. I was born in Haywood, Southwest Victoria. I'm connected to the Gunditjmara mob from my mother's side, and on my dad's side, I'm connected to Yorta Yorta and Wamba Wamba and Jutaroa clans.
Now, you're here today to talk to us about a very deadly community event, which is coming up here in Naarm or Melbourne.
Yeah, it's going to be the third Ngarra Jarra Noon healing ceremony, and it's going to be in partnership with the Jarrawal Foundation, which was set up to support families affected through Black deaths in custody. And so, yeah, we're going to do a special healing ceremony with 10 Victorian cultural dance groups, with the families invited to participate in the healing ceremony that have been affected through Aboriginal deaths in custody. And that's the main part of the event. And then there's also a music concert headlined by Briggs. We've got Crooked TP, Empath Soul, Jaden Lillis and Aaron Morgan all performing at that concert. And then we'll also have the Mindful Mob Healing Markets on the day as well. We'll have some other stalls. We'll have the Black Brews Coffee Van. Dadi Mamwara are going to be doing a community barbecue. So it's going to be a great day. It's a free public event. We'll also have some activities for the kids with traditional art, traditional dance and traditional games for the kids to participate in. It's on Sunday, 13th of April at Victoria Park in Collingwood or Abbotsford. Starts at 12 o'clock and finishes at 6 p.m.
A very big event coming up in the community, and you mentioned that it is the third year that this event has taken place, or the third event of this kind. How has it changed over the years?
I think, the first one we did, the nursery, was on a Tuesday night. It was a bit of a smaller event, but it had a lot of people there. I think we had over 3,000 people attend that event. And it was a special healing ceremony for Nicky and his family and other past AFL Indigenous players that had been through racism at Victoria Park. You know, I reckon we had about 30 ex-Indigenous AFL players on the night, and we had some of his elders come over from Perth, and we got them to perform a Noongar song. And, the highlight of that night was Nicky getting up and doing a corroboree on Victoria Park. So, to go from that bad energy to that good energy, it was just such a beautiful thing to see, and it was a beautiful night. And then last year, we did the event, and it was a tribute to Rumbelara and Fitzroy Stars Football Netball Club, and it was about resilience against racism and promoting healing through culture and ceremony. And, we had the 10 dance groups again perform that night, and I think we had about over 80 dancers perform from kids to elders. And that was that was probably the highlight, seeing all those dance groups perform. And then, this year, we've got a few more activities. We've got Briggs as a headline act, so that's going to be great to see. And then we'll also have the 10 dance groups as well for this year's event.
And that's a lot of dance groups to coordinate, hey bro? How did you pull all that together?
I remember probably 10, 15 years ago, was involved in an event called Kooriobbery, and it was where we got all the Victorian dance groups together and performed the ceremony. And I think from that sort of idea, this is what I wanted to encourage for this healing ceremony. And I feel really passionate about our dance groups, and they hold a lot of our culture, our language, our songs. And it's a bit of a rite of a passage for our kids to be involved in our dance groups, to learn their culture. And so it's it's always beautiful to see so many dance groups. And I reckon in Victoria there's probably over 20 dance groups now, and that's getting bigger. And it's just really beautiful to watch our dance groups perform this special healing ceremony.
And of course, this event is to support a lot of Victorian family members who have been affected, sadly, by Black deaths in custody in the community. What's some of the feedback that you've had from family members about past events?
Yeah, look, I think it's an important issue, and it's an issue that's been ongoing for a long time. And a lot of our families and communities have been affected by it. And so, we need that healing space and to be able to come together and heal. And the work that April Day is doing with her foundation, Jarrawal, they're doing amazing work in that space with working with families that have been affected through black deaths in custody. So we've put the invitation out to them to come along, and the feedback's been it's something that's definitely needed. And we've had some really great sponsors that have come on board for the event, so that's been great to see. It's really excited about this year's event.
And what do you love most about this day for you, Bruce?
For me, I've always had that experience of event management, when I had my record label, Payback Records, and I love putting on shows, for our Indigenous hip-hop artists. And I think for this event, just that event management, I love, working with other people and putting on the event, and then seeing the musicians and the dancers perform, that's something that I really enjoy doing and watching, our mob perform. And that's something that I'm really passionate about.
What would you say to mob who want to get down there? How would you encourage them to get along? What would you say, Bruce?
Yeah, look, get down there early. There's lots of activities. It's a family event. Bring the kids. There'll be lots of activities for the kids as well. We'll have the food vans there and coffee van. It's like I said, it's an important event. Our people and our community need healing. It's a journey that I guess I'm on with myself, with that healing space and just being able to, bring others along. And so, the more people we can get down there, then the better for our community.
Nathan Lovett Murray, ex-Essendon football player, thanks so much for joining us on NITV Radio today, and keep up the good work, eh?
Thank you.
And what a moolie to you. If you've just joined us, welcome to NITV Radio right across Australia today. I'm Kerry Lee, your host, taking you through this hour. And thank you so much to our guests we've just had on the program, Nikki Winmar and Nathan Lovett Murray, of course, former Essendon football player. And of course, a very deadly, very special healing event happening in Naarm or Melbourne this coming Sunday, 13th of April. And I'm talking about the Nagara Jarrah Noon event. That's right. It is a community event where people come together from community here across Victoria, and for those sadly affected by Aboriginal deaths in custody. I'm Kerry Lee, taking you through this hour, and coming up in just a moment, Thelma Plum and a little bit of Nick Cave on your radio. And just after that, on your wireless today, we're going to be talking with John Fain, former ABC radio host, and he'll be joining me to yarn all things of week two election wrap right here on NITV Radio. Right here on NITV Radio, I'm Kerry Lee, and coming up in just a moment, we'll be yarning all things federal election politics with First Nations Focus with former ABC radio host John Fain.
Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
Right here on NITV Radio, Kerry Lee here with you this afternoon. And it's that time of the week again where we check in with our guest to yarn all things federal politics. That's right, election 2025. I'd like to welcome to the program for week two of the federal campaign, John Fain, former ABC host. Welcome back.
Oh, it's wonderful to be here again, Kerry Lee.
Week two. Has anything changed this week, John?
Yeah, quite a lot has changed, and it's a very dynamic campaign and it's moving fast, and I think it's going to start moving even faster as we get towards the pointy end. The polls are showing a trend towards Anthony Albanese and the Labor Party and against the Coalition, and I think you can trace that back to the pre-election budget that Jim Chalmers delivered, take a bow, Jim Chalmers. And the fact that he's a Queenslander is relevant because there's lots of parochial Queenslanders who go, ah, good, we're pulling our weight here too. But beware getting excited on either side about these polls because the numbers are very soft. In other words, there's a lot of undecideds. And usually a few weeks out from when pre-poll voting starts, that's people who want to vote before the May 3 date. That starts in 2 weeks, which is pretty much coming up soon. There's a lot of people, like something like 40% of people who say they haven't made their mind up. Normally it would be around 20% at this time. The other thing is, and why it's soft, there's about 3 million people who will be voting in this election who have never voted before, either because they've only just become citizens or they've just turned 18 since the last election. So you're going to have 3 million people whose voting we have no idea about. There's no past history or pattern. So we kind of are reading the tea leaves about what that's all going to mean. So it's still, even though the margin seems to be getting a bit wider, it's way too early to tell. So pre-polling, what happens is everyone says, oh, the election's on May 3. But actually, May 3 is just when voting stops. Voting starts in 2 weeks. And that's when you can go and vote either with a postal vote or you can vote ahead of time because you might be travelling or you might be going to hospital or you might just not be able to get to the... You might be working on polling day. So you can cast what's called a pre-poll vote. And that goes on for a couple of weeks. So one of the big problems for the coalition, they keep saying, oh, well, we're going to release our policies when we're ready. We're not going to do it to suit the media, I think David Littleproud said on Insiders on ABC TV yesterday. We're not going to release it just to keep the media happy and feed the media. We'll release our when people are engaged. But if you leave it too late, people start voting before you've even released some of your policies and you've missed out on communicating with them.
And then what does this mean for the current government?
Well, it's to the advantage of the current government. The Labor Party seem to be running a much slicker campaign. So the day we're talking, which is now Monday, and it's April the 7th, Peter Dutton overnight has backflipped on one of his major policies.
Oh, do tell us.
So he was saying that they would help fund some of their new initiatives, in particular nuclear power and the like, by reducing the public service by tens of thousands of people and making public servants come back to the office and stop working from home. He's backflipped on those things overnight. The working from home was very popular, particularly with young families, with parents who were committed to trying to continue with two incomes in a family, but one parent could work from home. It was very popular. So they were experiencing a lot of blowback on that. And the other thing about cutting public servants, the Labor Party weaponized that by saying, oh, so all the public servants helping out in Queensland with tornado and flood damage, they're all at risk of losing their jobs. And then Peter Dutton said, oh, no, 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 we're only talking about Canberra public servants. And then they started talking, Labor Party started saying, oh, like you'll end up with another robo-debt. So that's all backfired on them too. So there's a lot of disquiet. I've been hearing some suggestions from people in the Liberal Party camp. There's a lot of disquiet that their campaign isn't as smooth and slick as they would like it to be.
And do we know why their campaign might be rolling out in such a way?
I think they should have been ready, but there's some disquiet and some tensions within the Liberal Party. But again, let's not speculate too much. And sure, one day someone will, you know, after it's all done and dusted, in particular if it looks as it looks like, if they continue to slip in the polls, the knives might start coming out and we might start to get a peek behind the scenes. Certainly happens in the Labor Party when things go bad. Mm. So, you know, I just remind people that oppositions don't win elections. Governments lose them.
Okay.
Typically, what happens is when a government's on the nose, you can sort of hear people waiting with baseball bats to wait for a chance to, you know, give them a whack, and figuratively speaking. So we'll see how things go. Now, the Labor Party had a big announcement on the weekend as well. The Prime Minister announced that if re-elected, the Labor Party will subsidise home batteries.
Okay, and what does this mean for consumers?
For solar power.
Okay.
So you will, at the moment, batteries are very expensive and it takes a long time for them to pay for themselves, so not a lot of people, if you install solar, only a fraction of those people put in a battery as well. But for community organisations, which for people listening to us on NITV audio, that's really important. So at the moment, you'd need a government grant to put in a battery. Well, the government's going to subsidise it even more. So you'll get batteries with solar that will pay for itself much more quickly, and that will reduce people's power bill. That went down very, very well. So there's a bit of catch-up undoubtedly going to be coming from the other side.
And I'm wondering, are there any policies out there that we've seen from the opposition with similar green policies?
Not so much green. And climate's not a big issue in this election. It's really interesting. Last time round, it was almost a dominant feature. This time round, it's almost as if people are saying, I still care about climate, but not if it's too expensive to do the things they're asking me to do. Because of the cost of living issue, which is number one and two and three, mm-hmm. cost of living, cost of living, cost of living. Yeah. People are saying, I care about the climate and environment, but can we push it back a bit till we've got a bit more room in our budget to deal with some of those things? So the coalition's policy was to subsidise fuel. It should go very well in the outer suburbs, particularly with tradies who cover huge distances and people in the bush. But it seems to have sunk without much resonance. It hasn't been hasn't had a long tail. And that's what you look for when people are still talking about a policy two, three, 4 days after it was announced.
What about the green surge we saw back at the 2022 election, John, and the independents and the teals?
So, as I've just said, climate doesn't have the same urgency, but I wonder if we've seen peak green. Certainly the polls are showing that the Greens' numbers aren't improving. And last time round, you might remember, they won a couple of seats in particular in urban Brisbane. And the Labor Party was pretty, they were regarded as, they were our seats, which is a very kind of old-fashioned notion. But they're trying to get them back. So that's going to be a crucial battleground. It'll be really interesting to see. So if Labor lose a few seats to the Liberals in some places, they're hoping to make up for it by winning some back off the Greens in Brisbane. So we'll see what happens. But the teal independents, as they're called, that's going to be really important to watch. And in particular in Victoria, there's a couple of high-profile teals, and their battles are too close to call and sometimes very much caught up in some local issues as well as the big, you know, movements. So the sort of trends that we see nationally, but it's too early to know exactly what's going to go on with some of those seats in inner suburban Melbourne and fairly affluent communities where climate and Scott Morrison was, you know, that was an issue and Scott Morrison was an issue. We'll see whether that's still the way people think one election cycle further on.
Now, let's talk about Clive Palmer. I have noticed he's been spending some dollars, indeed, on advertising for this election campaign, John, on TV and on social media. Share your thoughts with us on what Mr. Palmer's strategy is this election.
Body else put together, and it looks like he's doing the same thing again this time around. And, I mean, at some stage, he was interviewed about 3 or 4 months ago, and he said, oh, it's, you know, it's my hobby. Politics, you know, some people you know, do basket weaving or play golf, and for me this is my recreation. It's a very expensive hobby, I might say. And I don't think he's quite got the same novelty appeal as he had last time around, and people are going, oh yeah, we've heard all this stuff before. But the other factor with him, he's called his party this time Trumpet for Patriots, to invoke the Trump word in the naming. When he decided to do that months ago and registered that, that looked like a positive. Now, it looks like a negative. So Trump is on the nose. Even Peter Dutton, who was aligning himself and expressing admiration and praise for Trump a few months ago, is not doing that anymore. And as Trump becomes, you know, creates more havoc and chaos in stock markets and in the American administration, it's becoming a bit toxic. And Clive Palmer is stuck with it now because he's registered that name. He can't change it or do anything about it. And I think it's actually cannibalising the Conservative vote. It'll be really interesting to see. I think he, in Queensland, it'll take votes off Pauline Hanson and stuff, but I don't think it's going to resonate in the suburbs where it counts. It's going to be really interesting to watch.
Now to my next question, John. Has either party made announcement that impacts specifically on First Nations communities?
There's not a lot specifically announced. It may still come. I'd like to think, I'd be optimistic that the issues that your audience and you and me that we care about are going to be front and centre. But I suspect that after the referendum, both parties think, eh, that's done and dusted. It doesn't work with the marginal seat voters who we need to appeal to. The battery subsidy, that should affect people in remote communities, as would the fuel subsidy from both parties. But Albo announced, the Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, I should give him his full title, they announced very quietly changes to Indigenous procurement policies. In other words, government contracts going with preference in remote communities and remote Australia, preference to companies that are 51% or more owned by Aboriginal people. And that was a commitment that got almost no coverage. Now, it's always been, there's been a policy to assist Indigenous corporations and businesses in rural and remote Australia, but this is lifting it up and stopping some of the rorts that were in there as well. They've also announced a plan to replace the CDP.
Oh, how so? This is interesting.
Also had almost no coverage. So a supposedly more effective RJED, Remote Jobs and Economic Development Program. Now, details are scant, and it seems to have been rushed out to meet political rather than the and the election cycle rather than sound policy or administrative needs. But it's supposed to be more targeted, less expensive, but there's no clear way of being able to evaluate it until the details are provided, but it was announced just before they went into caretaker mode, and it's designed, I think, to shore up that seat of Lingiari that we talked about last week, which is the Northern Territory except for Darwin, where there's a very close tussle. Marion Scrimgeour is trying to hold on to the seat, and we're going to see what happens. A lot of remote communities who vote by mobile polling booths, and we'll see what happens, whether it affects Northern Australian votes in some of those seats where there are large First Nations and Indigenous communities.
And John, can you explain, there is some controversy I have noticed in the landscape about university places for overseas students. What's happening here?
So Australia has a very lucrative industry. It earns a lot of money for the country in bringing students in from Southeast Asia, China in particular, but also a lot of the other countries, Malaysia, Thailand and India increasingly, and educating them in our universities. And in fact, our universities make a lot of their income from overseas students, which means we don't have to provide as much government money to the universities. Peter Dutton has said he thinks there's too many overseas students, and he's linked it to the housing shortage.
Mm.
Now, students don't live in the suburbs mostly. They live in student accommodation in the inner city where the universities are, or they cluster in colleges and the like. But there is some contribution, but it's very, very small. But if you cut off those overseas students, and I should declare an interest, I work part-time at the University of Melbourne. So
Thank you, John.
I have a foot in that camp.
Mm.
But if you cut off the overseas students, our universities will be poorer, and that they will struggle to meet the needs of domestic students just as much. So if you get rid of the overseas students, it doesn't automatically free up places for domestic students, because unless they're paying a lot of money, because the overseas students provide a lot of money. We charge them a fortune.
Mm.
And Mr. Dutton says he's going to increase their fees significantly, which will mean a lot of the people who struggle to get to Australia, but their families often collect money in order to sponsor one kid to come and get an education, that'll all be wiped out. So I don't think it's a good thing, but then I have a dog in the fight, don't I?
And I did notice in this announcement over the weekend with Dutton and the university students being less intake into Australian universities and into Australia, this is also tied in with him then saying that he can offer young people, young Australians, yeah, more opportunities to purchase their first home. What do you think of this, John? That can be a good thing, right, for our young people.
If it works that way.
Hmm.
But a lot of the housing experts say, no, there's not much of a link between overseas students and housing affordability, just like there's not much link between overseas students and rental shortages. So we'll see what it means. But, you know, there's no doubt we've got thousands of, you know, nursing students who come from overseas, and while they're doing their studies, they work in aged care and so on. Well, all of that's at risk too. And we've got labour shortages in a lot of these areas, childcare, aged care and so on. So you tinker with this at your peril, is my view.
Thank you so much for joining us on the radio today, and we'll see you again for week three next week, right here.
Looking forward to it, Kerry Lee.
Thank you, John Fain. See you next time. You're listening to NITV Radio. I'm Kerry Lee, your host. Thank you so much for your company this hour, as we take you through this Monday afternoon. And now to our next story. And the Imperial Hotel in Erskineville, which is in Sydney's inner west, has been added to the New South Wales Heritage Register, one should say. It means that this iconic pub will have its very future protected in recognition of its deep cultural and historical significance to the queer community. And right here on NITV Radio, coming up now, this is Deborah Grook reporting for SBS News.
Here at the Imperial Hotel in the Sydney suburb of Erskineville, it's time to celebrate. Heritage Minister Penny Sharp says the hotel has just been listed on the New South Wales Heritage Register.
The State Heritage Register gives special recognition to buildings, but also to places. And what it does is it tells the story of that have been important to various communities. It's not just about old buildings. And the listing today with the Imperial Hotel really recognises its very rich queer history.
That important history is vast and varied. To begin with, the Imperial Hotel features in the beloved 1994 film The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. A live drag show inspired by the film is performed here every Saturday night. But the hotel has been at the heart of Sydney's LGBTIQ plus community for decades, since it was taken over in 1983 by local businesswoman Dawn O'Donnell, a year before the state decriminalised homosexuality at the urging of then-Premier Neville Rann.
We've got to bring our laws in New South Wales into line with the other states.
Performer Miss 3D once worked for several years for Dawn before Miss O'Donnell's arrival in the Inner West as the fight for rights kept expanding. Miss 3D says she wasted no time in transforming the hotel into a vibrant hub for the LGBTIQ plus community.
Apparently it was quite a working class pub before she took it over, and she really changed the whole face of the gay scene, Dawn did, on Oxford Street and here as well.
Sydney MP Tanya Plibersek says the listing celebrates the hotel's significance as the longest-running queer-friendly venue outside Oxford Street.
It's an iconic Sydney venue that tells a very important story about the way our city has changed. And this goes along with the Commonwealth's support for the listing of the original 1978 Mardi Gras route on the Commonwealth Heritage List. It's so important to tell the story of all of our communities in Sydney and in Australia, and the history of the LGBTIQ plus community in Sydney is an important one to tell and to preserve.
Besides its community significance, though, Nighttime Economy Minister John Graham hopes the listing will bring tourism dollars to the city, which some say still needs a boost after COVID.
Sydney's nighttime economy is bouncing back. This is a big moment to mark it. We've lost some of our music heritage recently. I'm thinking about the Burwood home of the Young Brothers from AC/DC, demolished at short notice to be replaced by a development. We really need to market better. That's why today is so significant. It's part of a broader plan to represent our music history, our venue heritage across Sydney.
Right here on NITV Radio. That story there, which showed us a deep cultural and historical connection to a very deadly pub. Time for me to get out of here for today. I'm Kerry Lee. I'll see you mob next time. Stay deadly.